Thanks, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, May 14th, 2016. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Kip Stube. Here are our top stories this evening. A Zimbabwean heading for America perfects a mother's ways of making peanut butter.
When I finished school, I started working for Head and Hands, but I wanted to do something of my own. So I then decided I want to start a business.
Women and girls continue facing various problems in Zimbabwe.
Economic conditions in Zimbabwe have really left the girl child vulnerable to all forms of gender-based violence.
And as usual, we'll focus on women's issues. Stay tuned. She grew up watching her mother crush peanuts with a small grinding stone to make peanut butter for her family. Now Nobukhosi Ndlovu is doing exactly the same, except that she has founded a company that produces peanut butter at a large scale for commercial purposes. Nobukhosi is one of the 60 Mandela Washington Fellows headed for the United States next month. She talks to Studio 7 reporter Ntukameli Komo about her journey.
I'm so excited to be part of one of the people who were chosen to be part of the Mandela Washington Fellowship. Yeah, there were a lot of people who applied for it, and only about 58 of us are going to be going for the fellowship. I'm so excited. I can't wait to go and learn new things and come back and implement them back home. My company is called Kali Students, but it's shared as Nuki Food. We manufacture predominantly peanut butter, and we also package peanuts, roasted nuts, nut timber, and salt.
Many young people would sure love to be their own employers, just like yourself, but the economy is just not permitting. How did you beat the odds?
I did my first degree at Midland State University. So part of the honors degree, you do 1 year work-related learning. So when I did my work-related learning with Head and Hands Consulting Services. So after finishing school, they took me back. But initially, I've always been someone who's business-minded. I've always loved selling things. Even at college, I had an opportunity through the SAFE board, which is the Student Entrepreneurs Board, to run our school tuck shop. So when I finished school, I started working for Head and Hands, but I wanted to do something of my own. So I then decided I want to start a business. That's when I started Mixi Foods. But I didn't have enough capital to buy the equipment that I needed to start the business. I had raised some money, but it wasn't enough. So I approached the microfinance, which is called Real Microfinance. It's the microfinance, but then their vision was to empower women in business, but they were empowering groups of women. But when I approached them, I was alone, and I wanted a loan for myself, and I didn't have collateral. So I explained to them the reason why I wanted the loan and how much I raised. It wasn't enough for the equipment. They said, what collateral do you have? I had a small car, but they said, your car is not even enough to cover part of the money that you wanted. So I convinced them that I was going to pay them back, and I told them that they can use the machine as collateral. If I don't pay, they can take back the equipment. Finally, they had me, and they gave me the loan.
How is business at the moment?
When we started in 2018, we registered quite some growth, but now what I can tell you is that from last year, 2015, I faced quite a lot of challenges in business, and it has gone down, and now it's stagnant. We are not registering any growth, and it's actually going down. There was a time when we could do up to 2 tons a day, but now even if you process a ton, sometimes you don't sell all the products.
What are your expectations from the Mandela Washington Fellowship?
I'm hoping to learn from other fellows. It's going to be fellows from different African countries and the lecturers from the U.S. I'm hoping I'll learn how other people are doing their businesses in their respective African countries. And I'll also learn from the people from the U.S., the culture there, how are they conducting their business, how have they become, what have they done for them to be successful.
And what next after the Mandela Washington Fellowship?
I'm hoping that knowledge will assist me with new business strategies back home. It will also empower me to be able to mentor other young girls or young women out there who intend to start their businesses. I will knowledge transfer. Whatever I will learn in the U.S., I'm willing to come and share with other young women back home and young men on how they can run their businesses. And also in terms of corporate governance, in terms of running my own company, I'm going to be exposed to people who have done it, who have achieved better things in life. And I'll also use it to also make my roadmap to where I want to be in the future.
Mandela Washington Fellow Nobukhosi Ndlovu on the line from Harare with reporter Ntungameli Gomo. In this second edition of Girls, Youth and Development, let's hear what our partner Nyari Mashamombe, a human rights activist, founder and executive director of Take a Life International, has for us today.
Today I'm joined by a talented and passionate young woman who is a co-founder and director of programs at My Edge Zimbabwe, a youth-led and founded organization. And Nyasha, welcome to this program today.
Thank you very much, Nyari, for inviting me.
So thank you very much again, Zimbabwe, for being with us. Today's topic really is going to discuss the linkages between economic hardships as we are facing them today in Zimbabwe and the link between that and gender-based violence against girls and young women, but as well as violence in our communities. Tell us your experience with young people as far as economic situation is concerned and violence against girls, young women, and community at large.
Okay, thank you very much, Nyari. It is very true that the economic conditions in Zimbabwe have really left the girl child vulnerable to all forms of gender-based violence, forms of manipulation, and all sorts of things that impede the development of the young girl into adulthood. So basically, at My Age Zimbabwe Trust, we promote issues of girl child empowerment, and we've been doing that by providing mentorship.
So you mentioned that there is a nexus between the difficulties in communities. I would like to know, I know you work in Mashingo, what are some of the issues that the young people are facing, the communities are facing right now because of this economic hardship?
Okay. So currently we have been working on the issue of ending child marriages. We've realized that due to the economic conditions prevailing, young women and girls are becoming very vulnerable to child marriages, especially right now since we are in a drought situation. There's food shortages, money shortages, and everything else. So parents and guardians are actually forcing those young girls to get married so that they can get something from the older men, which could be food or it could be money. So now the challenge that most girls are facing is dropping out of school and becoming someone's wife whilst they're still very young. And actually some of them cannot even be called young women, but they are adolescents.
Wow. So you spoke about the issue of child marriages that is rampant in Mashingo and how the drought has necessarily affected that. So we know that Zimbabwe recently outlawed child marriages. How is that affecting Mashingo? Because we know that on the 20th of January, the Constitutional Court outlawed child marriages.
The ruling of the Constitutional Court came at a very good time as we were implementing our project. But however now, as an issue, child marriage had already dipped or it's already rooted in our society. So we're doing as much as we can to sensitize the communities to say there is this law which is now passed, but and then so that the communities can know what to do. So we've also been trying to make sure that communities come up with what we call community charters, where they decide, because we have this ruling with the Constitutional Court, how best can they implement it with their own communities. So it's still a process. You know what happens whenever there's something new that comes up and something else. There might be a process of awareness.
Yes. I love what you just mentioned about your including of the community as the key responsible people of that work in the community of ending child marriages. In the interest of time, a quick word, that what can the youth do to address issues that affect the young people? You spoke about child marriages. I know there is a lot. I do know that there is the issues of drugs that young people go through. There is the issues of helplessness that's just been happening. So tell me what can the young people do? What can communities do? What can the government do to intervene in this current situation?
I think it is the responsibility of communities to take care of the girl child either way, because the, by virtue of them being children, they need to be taken care of by the community. So the communities should know that it is wrong and it is not improper to impede on the development of the girl child and allow them to go to school. And where possible, allow them to start small businesses, because we have had a case whereby entrepreneurship activities, some parents, they don't allow their girl child to participate, but yet it is a solution to the economic challenges they'll be facing. Then also for the girl child themselves, we've been encouraging them to be forthcoming. We have a lot of projects for girls, but sometimes because of some sort of hesitation, the girl child may not really participate. So we've been motivating them to say, you should take charge of your future, you should take charge of your life, do what you can and look for support. So we have opened up our arms to all the girl child and mother.
Oh, we have lost it. I think
we have lost it.
Yeah, and just summarize.
Maybe it was great to hear from Nyasha and as a young woman sharing her own experiences about the issues of girl children and young women in Mashingo. And unfortunately, the network was jealousy, but she was going to tell, she had told us that it is the responsibility of communities as well to take take charge of ending child marriages. It is the, also, I believe, it is the responsibility of our local governments and local authorities to make sure that the law is working for the people, and also that people, those who are going against the law in violating girls and young women and just the community at large, actually the law is applied. But at the same time, encouraging the government to take people seriously, and also to just put in place policies and laws that protect people, but also investment, because I mean people are suffering, there are no jobs.
Thanks very much, Nyari Mashamombe, a human rights activist, founder of and executive director of Take a Life International, a girls and young women's rights organization. Thanks also to Nyasha Panisa Sitole, a co-founder and program director of My Age Zimbabwe, a youth organization based in Masvingo province. You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Freedom of the press continues to be under assault in Turkey. Most recently, Can Dündar, editor-in-chief of the leading opposition newspaper Cumhuriyet, and Erdem Gül, the publication's Ankara bureau chief, were sentenced to prison after being convicted of leaking state secrets. State Department spokesperson John Kirby expressed concern over the guilty verdicts issued by the Turkish court, calling on Turkish authorities to support an independent and unfettered media, which is an essential element of any democratic, open society. Meanwhile, Turkey's independent communication network media released a report for the first quarter of 2016, stating that 174 members of the press were either fired or forced to quit, while 28 journalists and 10 publishers were currently under arrest. Turkey was also recently listed by U.S.-based think tank Freedom House as not free in their 2016 Freedom of the Press report. Its score rose 6 points, signifying a deteriorating trend. As Turkey's friend and NATO ally, said Mr. Kirby, we again urge Turkey to abide by its constitutional and OSCE commitments to fundamental principles of democracy, including due process, judicial independence, and freedom of expression. These principles are key elements of every healthy democracy and are enshrined in the Turkish Constitution.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And as usual, it's now time for the Women's Forum.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Tonight on the Women's Forum, we have one of the victims of human trafficking, Nancy Moyo, who says she just escaped from her employer where she was being held captive and is now at a shelter in Kuwait. Nancy is one of the 200 women that are believed to have been trafficked to Kuwait under the guise of greener pastures, but were later given menial jobs or turned into slaves, with some of them being sexually abused. Welcome to the Women's Forum, Nancy.
Oh, hi, how are you?
Tell us about your situation. What is happening right now to you in Kuwait?
I came from Zimbabwe to Kuwait. When I arrived in Kuwait, the money I had been promised was not the money that I was going to be paid. So when I was at the office, then I was told that I was going to be sent to Saudi Arabia.
What happened when you arrived in Saudi Arabia?
When I arrived in Saudi Arabia, I asked her, can you pay me my money? And then she refused. So I pretended to be sick. They took me back to Kuwait. When we got to Kuwait, I tried to communicate with the office, telling them about my place. They didn't come or give me any help.
How long were you with this family for, and how were they treating you?
The house, they could attempt to rape you because they had access to your room anytime they wanted. Sometimes I would cry because they could not give us any meat to eat or water to drink. They would tell you you have to stand and work. They couldn't allow us communication with our families, but I did in my phone amongst my clothes. One day they traded me to another family. So when I was at that family, money went missing, and I was saying, yeah, we have never used any money, so the money is stolen by you. And then they said, we are taking you back to the agent. We are good for nothing. We are not going to pay you anything. So when the driver came to pick me up at the house, the driver from the agent, but then he told me that they didn't give me your passport because you stole from them. So your family has to give us $2,500 from them to give you your passport. Then you say, for now, I'll take you to the office. You go and rest for a day. Then tomorrow morning, I'll come and fetch you and take you to the other family.
So when you arrived at this place where you were taken, were there any other Zimbabwean women?
Yes, there were three Zimbabwean women. One who had escaped through the window from her employers. Two others were fallen ill, and then their employers didn't take them for any medication. There was no food, nothing at all, not even water. We started praying. The family just gave each other courage. When I was in the car, the driver was talking to the boss on the phone, saying Zimbabweans are not becoming a problem. We have to send them far, far away because we are losing money. So we are going to send them to Saudi Arabia, Oman, Turkey, far away, they cannot escape, and then through them in 6 years. So the family told my parents that this is what they were saying. We then discussed the strategy for us to get out of that apartment. We stole the keys from the Filipino woman who was the caretaker then. So when she went to get a bus, we then ran out of the building, and then we unfortunately that taxi did wait for us, but we didn't have any money.
So if you didn't have any money, how did you then take a taxi to your next destination?
We had contacted Mr. Ngrenya at the Zimbabwean embassy, and Mr. Ngrenya paid the taxi. That when we got job, we filled our information, and they took us to a self-shelter. Now we are now waiting for us to get back home safely to our families.
Thank you very much, Nancy Moyo, for having been our guest here on the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye.
Thanks very much, Marvelous Mhlanganya Huye. We hope you are going to enjoy this weekend. Oh, That was the music of Peter Tosh coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. And now to recap today's top stories. A Zimbabwean heading for America perfects her mother's ways of making peanut butter. And women and girls continue facing various problems in Zimbabwe. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with the Dugamene Nkomo. This is Gibbs Dube in Washington, D.C., wishing you a pleasant evening and a very, very good night.